Sunday Baroque Conversations is made possible by the Friends of Sunday Baroque and is produced at WSHU Public Radio in Fairfield, Connecticut. I'm Suzanne Bona. Thanks for listening. Don't miss an episode of Sunday Baroque Conversations. Subscribe on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a review. If you want to find out where you can listen to our weekly show, visit our website, sundaybaroque.org, for a station list and our 24/7 stream. Again, that's sundaybaroque.org. Kari Joyner is an award-winning musician. He's receiving critical acclaim for his artistry. He's not only a performer, the Juilliard graduate is also a teacher and very much involved in social causes. Kari Joyner joins me via Zoom to discuss his wonderful and broad-reaching career. Hi, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Welcome.
So you started on the cello at the age of 8. Was that your first instrument?
Yes, the cello was really my first instrument. I started actually from being inspired by my two older brothers who are violinists and were actually already playing violin in the Suzuki method. And so it was like really not too much long after hearing them and watching them and kind of being inspired sort of with music in the home that I decided to pick up an instrument of my own, which ended up being different from the violins in range and size and everything. And so that's how I really came upon the cello. With help in the direction of my parents as well in that regard.
So are your parents also musicians?
So my dad was a musician. He was a percussionist actually when he was a lot younger and did play pretty regularly, kind of balancing that on the side with sort of a full-time job. And my mom used to play when she was a lot younger. She played wind instruments like throughout school and always, both my parents always loved music. And so because they couldn't really do it sort of as a career and profession, I think they wanted to sort of start it out as an activity and thing for their children to do. And so that's kind of how we sort of really got started. But it was always an important value in our household and to my parents even before starting my brothers and I in it.
Uh-huh. And how interesting. So dad was a percussionist and mom was in played wind instruments and all of you play string instruments.
Yes. Yeah. That definitely ended up being a funny sort of a situation and just sort of circumstance that happened like that.
Yeah. So was there some method to your madness that you chose something different from your older two brothers? Was that intentional on your part?
I think it was partially intentional and actually a little bit also just naturally gravitating to the sound of the cello. I always love when I was younger, like sometimes in when I would go watch my brother's lessons with my parents, or when I would just sort of be in the building that they would have lessons in, there would be a lot of different instruments, string instruments and other instruments as well, wind, brass. But there was something about the cello that I think really was cool to me. And I loved the way it looked, but also the huge range and register it had. So I think it was partially that, but also just this kind of desire to sort of be different and to kind of be this kind of radical in terms of that regard for instrument and everything.
Yeah. Now you and your brothers play together. I know that you've played for some very prominent people like Coretta Scott King.
Yes.
I'd love for you to talk about that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when we were growing up, so my family's actually from Maryland, but sort of when we moved to Atlanta, Georgia, which is where I really grew up and where my brothers and I sort of continued our musical journey to the sort of higher sort of next stages, we were really exposed to a lot of wonderful opportunities, both through a lot of community orchestras, most notably the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and a lot of their educational programs that we were a part of. And so through a lot of these programs, there were a lot of opportunities that arose for us to perform at different venues across the city. And we very quickly really progressed in terms of our skills and in terms of working together as sort of a chamber ensemble, sort of family ensemble. And so through this exposure to a lot of different people that we play for and opportunities, we were actually asked to perform at a kickoff event at the Martin Luther King Jr. Center. And this was actually an opening kickoff celebration many years ago when they had just renovated the center and did a lot of work there and kind of building a lot of programs and just kind of having a lot of artifacts and information. And so Coretta Scott King actually was at that event, and we didn't know till shortly before, actually. And so it was such an honor and privilege to be able to perform for just such a monumental and just absolutely incredible historical figure, and having had the opportunity to meet her and talk to her, and for my family to sort of, you know, get a chance to meet her was just such an honor and a really beautiful experience. And she really, really loved our music, and being a musician herself, having been a musician herself, I think was just so inspiring for all of us to see and to witness. So it was definitely a really amazing event.
Wow, what a once in a lifetime experience.
Yes. That's yes, amazing. Absolutely. And sort of there, it actually led to other opportunities even thereafter, getting a chance to perform at other notable events. We opened for some various different ensembles throughout the Atlanta area. Like, we were part of an event that was part of a fundraiser for Bruce Hornsby, many other notable figures in the Atlanta area, especially in the civil, that were also active in the civil rights movement, such as Jesse Hill, Ambassador Andrew Young, and a lot of other people sort of throughout the city. And that kind of led to a lot of other performances and opportunities that we were able to really embark on, which were just really exciting.
Right, right. And speaking of important historical figures, you also played for Hank Aaron's birthday party?
Yes, yes. That was really, really exciting. And actually how that came about was I when I was in middle school, actually, I applied for, I was actually encouraged to apply both from my private teacher and some other music educators through the symphony and programs that I was in to a scholarship. I was encouraged to apply for a scholarship that Hank Aaron had really found with his wife, Billy Aaron, called the Chasing the Dream Foundation and Chasing the Dream Foundation Scholarship. And so this was able to be basically a scholarship that provided different opportunities, both some financial resources, but also just kind of opportunities to take one's craft or whatever they were doing and kind of excel even further and really help support them. And so they've been one of my, the Aaron family has been one of my longtime supporters, even up until recently with his passing. But we had the opportunity to perform at many different celebrations, including his birthday celebrations, where we also met other esteemed and notable figures throughout the Atlanta sort of civil rights movement, but even in the legacy of Hank Aaron in the sports arena. So that was absolutely incredible event as well. And just such amazing, I mean, he's just such a role model, always has been, you know, for me, and just his whole life story is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So as a musician, who are some of your other role models? Maybe, you know, maybe teachers, they don't have to be famous people, but who are some of the people who have really inspired and mentored you and taught
you? So really definitely, all of my private teachers. So growing up, my first teacher, Bonnie Cohan, my second teacher, Martha Krzyzewski in the Atlanta area, as well as Joel Krosnick, who I studied with at Juilliard. And there have been many other, people that I've always looked up to, including Yo-Yo Ma. I've always loved listening to old recordings of cellists and actually even other musicians. It's like Perlman for violin, Jesse Norman and Leontine Price in the vocal area. And really actually a whole consort of musicians even across genre. I've always been inspired sort of seeing, you know, a wide variety of these figures really excelling at their craft and just the kind of artistry that they bring also to music is really inspiring, because it allows me to kind of see just how much of the human experience, but also how much art can really just be created by one individual and just what they can do with that art to transform, you know, their culture or just multiple cultures and really create a fusion of how music is so related and intertwined to just the social and political movements or kind of just any society and inner workings of a society, just the real symbiotic nature of that, I think, is just so powerful. And so all of these figures have been so inspiring to me and really allowed me to keep figuring out why I do what I do and what the meaning behind my art and craft is.
Yeah, yeah. And so interesting, you know, you mentioned some very prominent musicians of you know, other instruments and whatnot. And it's so fascinating that you mentioned two very famous singers, you know, Leontine Price, and Jesse Norman. And of course, the cello is often compared to the human voice, right?
Yes.
So there's that connection right there, and, you know, and emulating these amazing artists with this beautiful, their beautiful singing voices and your instrument, which is really so very much connected to vocal production. And
Yes. It's funny. So one of my prior teachers, Martha Gershevsky, when I stayed in Atlanta, that was one of her favorite phrases was, you know, you must, you know, emulate the human voice, you know, a singer. And of course, you know, she really instilled in me the knowledge that, you know, the cello, of course, is a very vocal instrument and does have those characteristics naturally. But there was something that she always wanted me to remember, which was not only to listen to singers, not just the ones that I enjoyed, but just in general to many different singers, because there was something about the way in which in crafting the sound from the cello and to be the most beautiful and the most natural, that we have to really actually listen to how the human voice can work in that way, and how singers are able to create extremely beautiful phrases, long phrases, small phrases, but just the breadth of sound through that. And that's kind of one of my, I think, the biggest takeaways from actually this former teacher of mine, which is how much she really instilled to always sing with the cello, you know, which is just, I think, an incredible mantra.
Yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, though, that your Juilliard degree also has a very strong math component. So not just the artistry of music, but the math of music. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, music, first of all, so in my upbringing and background, you know, the mathematics and really just the entire STEM field, one would say, of science, technology, and engineering, has always really been a big part and value in my family. Actually, kind of naturally, both my parents, sort of outside of their sort of more musical sort of hobbies, they were actually professionally scientists or in the science field. My mom as a chemist, or an organic chemist, and my dad working in the chemistry field as well. And so I always had an inclination for, when I was younger, mathematics in school. I just loved the subject. I loved just kind of numbers and computing, and just kind of, it really gave me this, I think the analytical side of me really just enjoyed always that subject as a field. And then as I got older, and then when I started my undergraduate degree, even right before I started my undergraduate degree, I was very set on potentially actually double majoring in mathematics and music before I went to undergraduate. And that really was a big decision in my college process, was if I was going to do a sort of majoring in cello or minoring in math or some type of sort of that. And so when I actually started college, I decided that since I was doing music full time as a major, that I could actually continue taking courses that I had taken right up to before going to college in math, and really see if I could continually develop maybe some understanding of how these classes could be related to music. And so it actually wasn't until really my doctorate where I was able to really make a synthesis of seeing music and math really combine into an analytical approach. And so I wrote this dissertation on the history of the relationship of music and math, and how composers and theorists use mathematics, say in music, to be able to not only compose works, but to understand a lot of, you know, harmony and the structure of music and how it's formed. And I realized, wow, you know, there's so many different types of interesting things that can really be related to how a student, for example, can analyze a score or practice their part, or how they can hear tuning. And so all these different things really, really combine to just, I think, a beautiful relationship of music and math that's so dear to me. And I'm hoping to kind of keep continuing developing some ideas for courses, even just for my current students now.
Yeah. And Bach, of course, is one of the composers who is most often, or very often, you know, compared to that sort of mathematical relationship. So do you have any comments or insight about the Bach cello suites regarding math?
Yeah, I think, you know, there is so much one can look at. On one hand, because the Bach cello suites are so rich with so much music in terms of the shaping of the phrases, and how Bach is able to create really beautiful moments in music through things that can seem very simple, like scales or a cadence. But then when one actually examines further, they actually find actually there's some formulaic like tendencies or things that seem to be created from a formula, maybe a certain number of bars or measures here that add up to actually create, you know, one moment or one spot that is just absolutely incredible or breathtaking or a climactic moment in music. And so I think that whether or not he was doing it consciously in composing, whether Bach was thinking about these mathematical principles, isn't necessarily as important as just what one can actually feel as a listener and what maybe one can understand when they realize, wait a minute, there's something actually that is so beautiful about both the artistic and aesthetic approach of the music as it exists on its own, but then also the beauty and the math that say, wait a minute, you know, there's exactly this number of measures, or there's exactly this way in which he continuously builds out a scale with this number of notes that then gets somehow manipulated to then become another scale or another type of formation. And so I think there, and it's even beyond the cello suites, it's also in his other instrumental works and even some of his works for some of the cantatas and other works that include vocal elements too. So that I think there's definitely this incredible ability that he had that people are still analyzing today and really have been just for decades upon decades, you know, and it's really necessary work too, just because it's so fascinating, you know, it's
yeah.
so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, it's hard to know which came first, right? It's like a chicken yes. and egg thing. Like, yes. Is he a genius because he inherently knew this and did this?
Yeah.
Or was it intentional, or is there some sort of overlap in those?
Yeah. And you know, and even as, you know, as someone who does a little bit of composing, you know, myself, I always wonder how much that does come into the consciousness, you know, when one's writing a piece or when one's creating a work is, you know, where do they start from? You know, is it kind of one simple idea? I mean, for Bach, you know, part of his job in growing up, you know, was to write transcriptions, you know, when he was in the church, or for him to be able to kind of essentially as an organist and really have a job performing to sort of, you know, write certain pieces that were for a purpose, but also the pieces that weren't necessarily for a job purpose that were for his own purpose. You know, it is a question of, you know, how much of you know, how much did he decide to really kind of create this from just the heart completely and just from his own mind, or if there was an actual kind of formula or real sort of, you know, which we do know, especially later on in certain composers in the 20th century or even later in the late 19th century, kind of were actually very much methodical and actual structure purpose. So it's very interesting, you know, and I'm always, I think it's a worth always exploring that concept, because there's so many ideas, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as I alluded to in my introduction of you really are very engaged in giving back to the community with a lot of really important charitable organizations, social organizations. And I'd really love for you to talk about that. Like, what are the things that you, what are the causes that are dear to you, and how do you engage with them, and why? You know, you have a busy life as a yeah. musician and yeah. teacher, and yet you also make time for these other important things.
Yeah, well, you know, I believe, and this is part of kind of ingrained in sort of my own background and just kind of my family history. I always believe that there is, for in any sort of social movement or cause, even if it's not a movement, but just an actual cause or sort of social topic, that art is sort of one of the things that could really be at the forefront, or just in terms of really making the pushing, you know, this idea of thought and really important political causes. I mean, even if we think back to the Harlem Renaissance or other movements, both current and even prior, there's always an artistic you know, cohort of individuals or just artistic element that is present to kind of help move that forward. And so for me, my family, like, having been, most of my family's in the Baltimore, DC area. And my grandmother, for example, was very active in the 1960s and 70s and prior, sort of in helping with education and really serving, you know, in terms of city council, mayor's task force, and really bringing some educational reform to school. But she also believed that art was an important thing to have in schools and to really, you know, so that was kind of, even when I was very young, I was always, you know, she always reminded me of that, and always, and my parents as well, always, you know, also always serving the community. And so for me, you know, I always thought, I always took it upon myself to say, in any given, you know, year, aside from the actual traditional concerts in halls or, you know, churches or venues that would be normally a conventional venue to perform a concert, to also try performing in unconventional venues. So I would, even when I was in Atlanta and then New York, serving different causes, such as performing in transitional homes for foster children, or performing in, there were a lot of homes that for homeless youth, particularly LGBTQ homeless youth, or any other cause, especially for children. I myself actually did have a childhood cancer when I was younger. And so I always thought that this would be great to give back in this way. And so I took it upon myself to perform in a variety of centers for cancers and blood disorders that were sort of not only children's hospital, but even adult clinics. So even when I was my undergraduate, I would take time to always go perform at some of these venues, whether it was in a waiting area or an inpatient or outpatient clinic. And that was always really a great way for me to really interact with the community and to really share my gifts with the community. And even still today, I really encourage my students, and I try to actively find social causes that I can really go, and even not just here in the US, but even abroad, and whether it's in schools or different kind of elementary or middle schools. Maybe it might be a center for senior care or for patients living with dementia or other neurological disorders and things of that nature. And so there's always been a push for me to try to find a particular cause. And as of recent, I mean, even with many different social movements around the US, such as the Black Lives Matter movement and even other movements, I always think that you know, there's a place for that, for music to really be created. And so I've sometimes in those settings, even during COVID, I tried to sort of make certain videos or short clips of myself to offer to victims suffering from COVID or who had known others that indirectly were suffering from COVID in many different areas. And so that's kind of what I always feel is important to really take part in.
Yeah. Yeah. And you sort of beat me to it, because I was going to ask you about how you instill that in your students. So that's yeah. Amazing.
I really learn from them also, because a lot of times, you know, they're already doing so many amazing things, or they might be a part of collectives or initiatives that they let me know about. And so it actually gives me even more invigoration to say, you know, there's a way to kind of maybe take a group of my students to a larger event or larger venue for this reason, throughout the community or throughout the city, which is a really, really cool thing. And that's something that, you know, also has been historically, you know, especially in performing arts, you know, so many people, you know, Yo-Yo Ma's a great example of that. It just always takes music, you know, across cultures and just, you know, all over the world, and really has been able to kind of, you know, places that you would never think, you know, where classical music would be. It's a real inspiring thing to be able to say, you know, I could, you know, brighten someone's day, or actually kind of inspire someone's, change someone's life, you know, through showing up in a tiny village somewhere where they may not have seen or heard a cello before.
Right.
It's really, really, really fun but also just rewarding to
yeah. Yeah. You reminded me, I mean, there was a famous video that went viral of Yo-Yo Ma at the vaccination center when he got his COVID shot. He just played because he had to wait for 15 minutes to make sure he didn't have a reaction.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And actually it was an event like that actually inspired. I have really wonderful colleagues and friends in New York City. And we perform in a piano trio quite often. And so we actually not long after decided, there's this organization, Sing for Hope, in New York City that does a wonderful array of community and work, charity work. And so we actually performed at one vaccination site at the Javits Center one year. Just like we set up shop for like 2 hours and just played for different, you know, and that was just, things like that are just so rewarding and also just really amazing to be a part of.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your CD, Cello Commotion.
Yes.
So you've got some Bach on it, but I want to know how you chose all of the music on it. Let's talk about music on it.
Yeah. So the inspiration from this album really came from my wanting to really show the world and really kind of, for me to actually become even more in depth with the history of the cello as a solo instrument. You know, so often, you know, we know of it as a, you know, orchestral, I mean, it's very versatile as an orchestral instrument, a chamber music instrument, but There's so many capabilities that it has as an instrument that can just be performed by itself. And so I really wanted to show that even the name cello commotion sort of is like a portmanteau word of cello and locomotion, the idea of carrying the cello through history and through time from very, very early, from its very early beginnings, you know, in the 16th, late 16th, early 17th century, till the present day. And so I really sought to look for works that were very, very early, almost late Renaissance, early Baroque works, which includes a Gabrielli, Richard movement that I, a piece that I played on there, as well as several other works that kind of really chronologically go sort of through time, you know, including Bach, a transcription of the Bach Chaconne that I made, as that's one of my favorite solo pieces from Bach, having heard my brothers perform that on violin when I was much younger, always in the house and in the home. And then kind of going to present day. So this album really is about sort of exploring that sort of, and also not only the different styles that one hears when the cello is sort of in these different settings, but really how the instrument itself actually changes through time, you know, and how very early works sound. And there's something even more vocal, perhaps one could say, from these early works versus, you know, some of the more orchestrally written works. There's an opera fantasy on that album, which kind of is the singing nature of the cello, but there's also a piece that kind of has a full sort of orchestral texture that kind of reminds one, you know, of that. And then a piece that is the Berio Sequenza, which takes the cello, a sort of contemporary work that makes it sound like a different instrument altogether, which is really cool. So that's really how that album came about and sort of what the purpose of it was.
Yeah. It's great. It's good stuff. The Chaconne, your Chaconne performance will be on the Sunday Baroque Bach Birthday Bash this year.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. That's one of my favorite. I mean, it's just absolutely, I've always just been in love with that work. And I was really, you know, when I actually took it upon myself, this was actually about maybe almost now over 10 years, almost 10 years ago, when I really decided to sort of make this transcription for cello, from looking, you know, in depth at different violin editions of that, of the score, and really kind of delving in. And so it's always just been a favorite. And I even performed it when I was at Juilliard. I actually performed it in many different coaching sessions with violin professors there, gave me a lot of insight into the phrasing and things, which kind of helped, you know, but it's just such a magnificent work.
Yeah. And there's Bach and math once again, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so much of that. And even in the, there's a work, because I did actually a lecture recital that kind of one of the works sort of as a part of the CD is this work that I wrote, actually called Evanescent. I wrote two works on the album, but one actually deals with spectral music, and spectral music really is about the sort of timbres and different kind of, that's a very mathematical in physics approach to cello in music, because it really demonstrates the kind of sounds you can get in the higher strata, higher spectra of sound in the harmonics and different partials in the overtone series. And so that was a real application there, I guess one could say, of math and music, but so it was definitely intertwined part of, yeah, even as by sometimes by accident, sometimes on purpose. So
So you have, my goodness, you have so many interests and enthusiasm for so many different things, but what like in this moment, what are you most passionate about? What, you know, what kind of plans are you cooking in your brain? On your planner, like, you know, what's next for you? What kind of exciting things can we expect from you?
You know, a lot of really, really cool collaborations. One thing I've always loved in combination of some of the things we spoke about is really the amazing quality that one can find when you sort of look at interdisciplinary aspects of art. And so I love collaborating with dancers. I love collaborating with actors and theater and drama. And so most recently, I actually did this exciting collaboration with the Atlanta Ballet when I was approached from the artistic director and a choreographer for using and extending one of my works that I had written, you know, on cello commotion, and sort of seeing this kind of really grow and realize into a full scale ballet. And we successfully were able to do that with this beautiful story with eight dancers and called Inherited, that by Anderson Sosa, which kind of featured this. It was a really an homage work to his mother that who had passed, but it's a beautiful work, and things like that. Or and I'm hoping to actually continue working on some ideas of working with it, you know, in the near future, and even longer term than that, of really creating another work with either ballet or even with theater, and really trying to, and sometimes even if in the realm of like, I've done some things in the past for like short films, and trying to work with really, really great colleagues of mine who are in the entertainment industry for writing for film or short things. So those are some things I'm hoping to do. I'm also excited for more performances at various venues, conferences, and maybe even in taking my students on more journeys through performing together. We really kind of at the University of Baldwin Wallace Conservatory, where I teach at, it's such an inspiring institution. There's so much great art that's there, and so I'm trying to really kind of build a cello choir here of just constant activities for a cello ensemble. And we have a weekly or a bi-weekly cello ensemble and technique class we do anyway. And so we're trying to kind of expand that and go perform places. And also just in terms of just personal life, traveling more, sometimes for music reasons, other times just for myself, to kind of see more of the world and be able to hopefully really kind of relish in my other hobbies. I love chess. It's a big hobby of mine, playing chess. I love automobiles and cars. So sometimes I love kind of attending car meets or car shows and traveling to see that. And just also hiking and many other just fun. I love animals too. So hopefully I'll get a dog soon. I don't have one yet currently, but I'm gonna get one soon here, in Ohio. But so a lot of really, really great things I'm hoping to see soon.
Yeah. I'm gonna get that COVID dog, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, absolutely.
Well, I have been speaking on Zoom with award-winning cellist, mathematician, chess enthusiast, animal lover, and so many other things, Kari Joyner, a Juilliard graduate whose debut album is Cello Commotion. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate it. Really, really wonderful to speak with you.